Pitch up maneuver in 10 seconds. This is it, Van Buren told herself, her pulse quickening. This is where O-1 failed. Confirm pitch up maneuver. On Van Buren's laptop screen, the little icon representing the plane was smack on the curve that displayed the nominal re-entry trajectory. No problems, she saw. Then she silently added, so far. Max heating. Max aerodynamic stress. She held her breath. The plane was on automatic, guided entirely by its onboard computer. Van Buren knew she could override the onboard system if she had to, but she dearly wanted to avoid that. Let the bird come in on its own, she repeated over and over like a mantra. Something flashed. Van Buren winced and glanced out the plane's window. A deep roll of thunder grumbled out there. No, she screamed silently. Hold off. Let me bring the bird back to the ground first. Initiating bleed-off turns, said the woman in the seat in front of her. The space plane was starting a series of 3 wide turns to slow itself down enough for the landing. Mach 8 and dropping. Turn 1 completed. The Mach numbers were spiraling down. The worst is over, Van Buren thought as she stared at her screen. She's through re-entry. No problems. Turn 2 completed. Another flash of lightning. Damn it, hold off, Van Buren grumbled in a whisper. More thunder. Turn 3 completed. A louder, sharper crack. That wasn't thunder, somebody sang out. Sonic boom, Van Buren knew. Can you see her? They had mounted a camera atop the Citation's fuselage and slaved it to the airport's radar. Van Buren clicked on the camera view. There she is, she shouted. The plane was racing across the clouds, a double vapor trail streaking off its wingtips. Come on home, baby, someone said in a fervent prayer. Landing gear down. Speed 210, 202, 196. Van Buren shoved her laptop under the chair in front of her, jumped to her feet, and rushed to the plane's hatch. It was slightly ajar. She pushed it all the way open and raced down the metal steps, ducked beneath the Citation's wing just in time to see the sleek, silvery space plane touch its wheels to the runway with a screech and a puff of rubber. The rest of the team piled out of the Citation as the space plane rolled to a stop, well short of the end of the runway. Yahoo! This time the cheer was heartfelt. Rain began to spatter down. Big fat drops splashed all over them. The Venezuelan soldiers around the perimeter of their area stood in amazement as they watched this gang of loco gringos dancing in the downpour. Len Kinski's apartment. After Kinski's explosive flare-up with Dan and her brief telephone conversation with Kelly Emmons, April had gone through the motions of work while her mind raced. Len couldn't have had anything to do with killing Joe Tenney or Pete Larson. He just couldn't. But Kelly thinks he's involved in one way or another. And if he leaves the company, goes back to New York or someplace else, we won't be able to find out what he knows about all this. After more than an hour of such worrying, she phoned Kinski's apartment, only to hear his answering machine's taped message. Len, it's April. You're not leaving without saying goodbye to me, are you? Kinski picked up the phone. April, I'm here. Len, you're not really leaving, are you? Yeah, I've got to. His voice sounded shaky, nervous. Without saying goodbye? I wish I could, babe, but I've got to split.
Can't we at least have dinner together before you go?
I'm in a big rush, honey.
Taking a deep breath, April said, I could get a pizza or something and bring it over to your place.
A long hesitation. Then Kinski said, Can you get here by 5 o'clock?
I'd have to leave the office early.
She knew Dan would be upset. There was always so much for her to do. But Dan's attention was riveted on the space plane's flight test.
He probably won't even miss me until after the plane's landed in Venezuela, April told herself.
Don't tell Dan you're coming over to see me, Kinski said, halfway between pleading and demanding.
Okay, said April. I'll be there by 5. What do you like on your pizza?
Doesn't matter, as long as you're with it.
April told Dan she was leaving early. He merely nodded and waved a hand at her, preoccupied with the flight test. As she drove to the ferry, she phoned her apartment. No answer. Kelly's already left, she thought. She was about to try the FBI agent's cell phone number when her own phone beeped. It was Emmons.
Bad news, April. I've got to head back to Houston.
Back to Houston? When?
Right now. I just finished packing my car and telling the motel that I quit.
But I'm going to see Len Kinski, April said, alarmed.
I'm going to his apartment.
Without hesitation, Emmons said,
Call it off. I don't want you there without backup.
April pulled into the parking line for the ferry. This early in the afternoon, hers was the only car there. The ferry was at the pier, its ramp down, empty and waiting for cars. But nobody was in sight, and the chain was up, blocking access to the ramp.
Kelly, if I don't get to Len this afternoon, we'll lose him.
He's going to New York, isn't he?
I don't know. From what he said, maybe not.
Doesn't matter. We can find him if we have to, Emmons said. One of the ferry crew came out and took down the chain. Then he waved to April, gesturing for her to pull up into the ship. Edging her Sebring over the bumpy ramp, April said,
You won't have any reason to search for him if he leaves here without talking to me. I don't want you to see him without me to back you up, Emmons said. Len's not dangerous, not like that.
Maybe not. But the people he might be connected to are probably killers. That's who he's running from, most likely. Another ferry crewman ambled up to April's car. He was young, reasonably well-groomed despite his tatty T-shirt, and smiling pleasantly.
I'll call you back later, April said.
I'll be on the road back to Houston, Emmons replied.
I'll call you.
Don't do anything foolish, April. The crewman smiled at her.
Take it, please.
April clicked off the phone, put it on the seat beside her, and pulled her wallet out of her handbag. She handed the young man her commuter ticket, noting that it was just about used up and she'd have to buy a new one in a few days.
Sorry to make you wait, she said.
The young man's smile grew wider.
Got nothing else to do.
He spread his arms, and April turned around in her seat and saw that hers was the only car in the ferry.
Timing is everything, Kinski told himself as he nervously folded his laptop and slipped it into its black carrying case.
He had just closed out his bank account with a local Lamar bank and transferred the funds electronically to the account he kept with the Chase in New York. Now he had a healthy balance on his platinum Visa card. He still hadn't decided where he was going. Seattle, maybe, or L.A., someplace where Roberto couldn't track him down. He had received four messages on his answering machine, informing him that Roberto was on the road from Houston coming down to see him in person.
We gotta talk about this launch you didn't tell me about, Roberto had said in his last message.
The tone of his voice chilled Kinski to the marrow. Roberto had said he'd get to Lamar around 8 p.m.
Be in your apartment when I get there, man. I want to have a face-to-face with you.
By 8 o'clock, Kinski thought, I'll be in a plane heading for Chicago or maybe Canada. Toronto's supposed to be a reasonably livable city. It was 10 minutes before 5. I ought to leave. I ought to get out of here right now. But April said she'd be here at 5.
She's coming here to my apartment. 5 o'clock.
Maybe she'll come with me. Maybe the two of us could go to San Francisco. That'd be fantastic. He shook his head.
Stop being such a schmuck. Dan's probably told her to come over. Try to talk me out of leaving.
Then he thought, well, maybe she's working for them.
Maybe she's coming here to make sure I stay long enough for Roberto to get here.
Nah, that couldn't be, he told himself. If she was working for them, they wouldn't have needed me. Still, he fidgeted nervously around the furnished apartment, eyeing the hideous clock on the living room wall above the sofa. It was in the shape of some sort of fish, pale blue and ghastly. At 2 minutes before 5, the doorbell chimed. Kinski jumped nearly out of his skin. He tiptoed to the door and put an eye to the peephole. April. He unlocked the door and invited her in with a majestic sweep of his arm, careful to look out into the hallway to see if Roberto or anyone else was lurking out there. Nobody. While Kinski bolted the door and rattled the security chain into place, April looked around, then put the big flat cardboard pizza carton she was holding down on the coffee table.
I got mushrooms and pepperoni, she said. I hope that's okay.
Fine.
He wiped his suddenly sweaty palms on his slacks. April stood uncertainly in the middle of the living room. She was wearing a pale green blouse and tan slacks. Kinski thought she looked beautiful.
Have a seat, he blurted, gesturing to the sofa.